from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Rose Peck has been called the most powerful woman in San Francisco, and many credit the Chinatown political activist with being the kingmaker behind Mayor Ed Lee's election and the person most responsible for the increasing political power of Asian Americans in the city of San Francisco. She'll join us as part of our First Person series, profiling the leaders, innovators, and others who make the Bay Area unique. Rose Peck is general consultant at the San Francisco Chinese Chamber of Commerce and joins us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. Rose Peck holds the position of general consultant to the San Francisco Chinese Chamber of Congress, but is regarded by many to be the most politically powerful woman in San Francisco. And she joins us in this forum hour as part of our ongoing First Person series, profiling leaders, innovators, and others who make the Bay Area unique. And Rose Peck, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. And no cigar. We just got the story of why you should be on the cover of San Francisco Magazine with a cigar. It was all a prop and all that, going back maybe to Warren Hinkle profile of many years ago, where you were a cigar smoker, drinker, and all these things that you don't do. People often talk about you in ways that you decline to be associated with. I mean, as a lobbyist, for example, as a kingmaker, as a mover and shaker, you somewhat demur on a lot of those, don't you?
Yeah, because it's not true. And I don't know when people work for their community become a lobbyist. You know, lobbyist is somebody that gets paid, you know, for a specific event, specific issue, specific legislature. The connotation really is not very flattery. And I find it a little disconcerting when people use that word so loosely.
Well, it was used by former Supervisor Aaron Peskin about you, in fact, who you call the Taliban, I guess. You once introduced as a member of the Taliban.
No, Supervisor Peskin, I called him many names, you know.
Like, we won't use those on the air, yeah.
No, they're fine, you know, I call him Taliban because he sabotaged and blocked, you know, a lot of projects and community projects, I call it, in our neighborhood. And then he had the audacity to show up at one of them. So it was right after September 11th. And so that's when I refer him as a Taliban.
Well, when people talk about you, and I know you don't like to be called a power broker, you say that, you know, you're a civic leader or a civic activist, and that suits you more than being called a power broker. Maybe even you said if you were Caucasian, they probably wouldn't necessarily say, suggesting that maybe racism even attached to calling you a power broker. But you had a lot to do with Mayor Lee getting elected and campaigning for him as well as other candidates. You've raised a lot of money, not only on behalf of many candidates, but certainly on behalf of many projects and done a great deal in this community, for your community. So I suppose the word lobbyist in many people's minds means political influence somehow, or it translates in that way.
No, I think it's a pay hack, you know. That's the connotation that I have received. And people advocating for community rights, for their favored, you know, schools, hospital, or whatever, you don't go around calling people power broker. Who do you broker for, you know?
Well, you are the broker for your community. You work for your community, right? I mean, that's been your profile.
Yes.
And that's what you want the public to think of you as, someone who is an advocate for your community, right?
That's correct. But when you say somebody's an advocate for your community, it certainly is very different when you, you know, refer to people as a power broker. Somehow, you know, you motivated by influence, and you're influenced by money, and you're influenced by those very artificial and superficial momentarily needs, you know, of specific time, specific company. That's how I look at it.
What, so you're motivated by what then? What centrally or principally do you feel you're motivated by?
I'm motivated by improving the lives and the quality of lives for my community and for San Franciscans.
Well, you've done a lot on that score. I mean, you raised a lot of money for the Chinese hospital, for and in fact stopped high-rises from being built in Chinatown. And, I mean, the ledger is very clear in terms of the works that you've done. And I was thinking before, because I knew we were going to have this interview today, I was thinking about the fact that going back to early days when I started working in public radio, I had people like Henry Duron talking about Chinese and affirmative action. Mm-hmm. And he would say, where are all the Chinese people in public life? Where are the Chinese Americans or Asian Americans fulfilling or filling political posts? And now, you know, it's almost as unbelievable to many people as a black man being president. Now we have so much political power, Asian Americans, not only here but in Sacramento. And a lot of people say, Rose Pack, that's why.
Well, you know, it's I can't take all the credit. Over 100 years, so many people have sacrificed in my community or in the Asian community in general, have attempted to be involved, to be elected. And you have to understand it wasn't that long ago that, you know, we weren't even allowed to become citizens, or that we were treated, you know, or allowed to go to the public schools here, or even treated at the public health facilities.
Well, the Exclusion Act
yes,
was enforced for many years, yes.
Yes, and so those people paved, our forefathers paved the way for us to come in and to make some strides. I think it is a very compelling narrative for the last 40 years, one of whom you mentioned, Henry Durr, there's Gordon Chin, there is Mayor Ed Lee, there's a whole group of our community leaders who put a lot of time and effort into this narrative. How do we get our people elected and represented in the various level of city government? I happen to be one of those people that stayed a little longer at this effort.
Well, your roots are in the civil rights movement, you and Ed Lee both, but there are those who will say, and this is the narrative one hears, Rose Pack and Willie Brown made Ed Lee the mayor. Ed Lee said, I'm not running, I'm a city administrator. He even said on the show, I don't want to run for mayor, I will not run, and so forth. And then this campaign began, Run Ed Run. And so people have said, somewhat glibly maybe, it was you and Willie Brown who sort of orchestrated
that
all that.
That is, you know, so unfair to both the community and Mayor Lee as well. See, he was a city administrator, and the timing of politics, you know, is very important. And I happen to know the city fairly well, and I happen to know that if Ed Lee did not seize that opportunity, it might be years or decades before we have such a opportune time to have a Chinese American get there. He was already there, so it was just one step further. Of course, everything is political in this town. And I would be remiss if I saw this opportunity and did not seize it and try to convince Ed Lee to run for mayor. Willie Brown helped me, definitely, but helped the community. But the whole community was ready. So the Run at Run was a format to convince Ed Lee to run and to show him that there's actually support out there for him.
Talking with political activist Rose Pack, who is a general consultant with the San Francisco Chinese Chamber of Commerce. Do people give you too much credit then when they say you're a kingmaker, or when they say the Central Subway was funded largely is a huge victory for you and your efforts and your energy, or the legislation that has authorized rebuilding and seismic retrofitting of the Chinese hospital, again, largely due to Rose Pack? Are they giving you too much credit?
Yes, I think so. I don't think that, you know, Rose Pack can deliver all that. It's the whole community effort. I have the Chinatown CDC, you know, Gordon Chin, Phil Chin, they were all around. It was a group effort for the most part of all the things that I've mentioned. I just stuck to it longer than most people.
Well, and provided a leadership role. I mean, you will concede that, you know, when it comes to getting campaign money or getting people mobilized to vote, there's a leadership role for you that you fulfilled.
Well, it's something that I made the personal decision many years ago that some people are good at doing certain functions and others at other tasks. And there are a whole bunch of us that really conscientiously sat down and looked around and say, how do we move from point A to point B to point C? And it was, we had many failures, but we tried and tried again. Yes, every morning I get up. To me, it's a new day. So if I failed yesterday, I am not afraid to try it tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. It's not that I'm smarter or people are more stupid. It's just that I think I'm persistent and very stubborn. And after, you know, you try so many times, one day you succeed. People don't see the failure. They only see that point of success.
Well, you talk about your persistence and your perseverance. I want to read something that came in earlier this morning before I came on the air with you. This is from Dwight Clark, not the baseball player, but
yes, I know Dwight Clark.
Well, listen to what he writes.
The former dean.
He says you might want to. He said you might want to ask Rose about the early years in Macau. I actually want to talk to you about early years, but he says they show that she was a rather extraordinary person, even as a teenager. In her mid 1960s, a Jesuit priest, Father Patrick Schulz, was earnestly engaged in trying to find any kind of work for the flood of refugees seeking safe haven in Macau. As his right-hand person, the then-teenage Rose essentially ran his set of factories, which, as I recall, employed thousands of people who made fireworks, handled simple assembly, and other jobs. These were the early years of Volunteers in Asia, a Stanford nonprofit which I founded. Our volunteers working with Rose were amazed by her drive, commitment, and extraordinary leadership ability. The same skills in Chinese community in the San Francisco area has benefited from them. So that's really a lovely testament. But what right now are the biggest issues facing, well, the Asian American community in San Francisco from your perspective?
How we can get more involved, you know, to help our new immigrants. Housing is a constant battle in San Francisco. The cost of housing is also very prohibitive. But with any immigrant community, you face the same problems. It's not exclusively Chinese Americans. Hispanic Americans, everybody face the same problem. And have we reached the parity so that, you know, you lay back a little bit? I don't think so, because the need is greater now than ever. I hope the Central Subway will relieve some of the transportation problems that I see facing our community. For example, you know, nearly 70% of our residents in Chinatown do not own a car. They exclusively, you know, rely on public transit.
And there's still terrible poverty in Chinatown.
Yes, 67% of our people live below the poverty line. And I'm hoping more and more affluent, better educated, bilingual young people come back and help those less disadvantaged. And, for example, you know, the Chinese hospital, we were somewhat successful in recent years to recruit the offsprings of our medical staff. So the second, the third generation of Chinese American physicians who are bilingual are coming back to serve the community. A recent example is one of our cardiologists, Dr. Xu Wing Chen's daughter, Macy Chen, who Stanford graduate, you know, cardiologist, so decided to give up a lucrative practice to move back into Chinatown practice. You know, then we have Dr. Raymond Lee's son, Gordon Lee, you know, who is a neurosurgeon at Stanford, now cut back one day at Stanford Hospital to work at the Chinese hospital. So on and on and on, you know, in all fields, we're needing experts.
It's heartening to bring them back and to have them return in that way. Again, we're talking to Rose Lee, who, by the way, we should say, has a master's in journalism from Columbia University and was the first Asian-American reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. And you've had some public famous feuds. Let's talk about those for a moment. Not only with Aaron Peskin, but you wanted Jane Kim, at least so the story went, and fell out with Stephen Chu as a result. Leland Yee and you supposedly were feuding. Correct the record then.
Yeah, it's not feuding. It's disagreement. With Leland Yee, I think Ed Lee is a more viable and more capable candidate than Leland Yee. After all, you know, I felt Leland was partially responsible for mentoring Ed Chu that got him into the trouble that he got himself into. So how can you be in public service, you mentor people, and the first 4 months they go and prey on your own people. Don't think, you know, he is, my opinion, the quality for a mayor of San Francisco.
So, how about for a state senator?
I wouldn't elect him myself, but I respect other people voted for him. So that is the reality.
Can I also ask you about something that is getting a lot of attention? I want you on the record on this, too. And that has to do with the zoning and the influence that you supposedly played, political influence, again, the high-rise residential a tower near the waterfront on Washington Street, 8 Washington Street. Again, you know, there have been charges that have gone back and forth. So let's hear your side of that story.
Not charges. You know, it's one-sided.
I'm talking about former Supervisor Peskin largely, yeah.
Former Supervisor Peskin is very irresponsible person. And then praying that because I'm always in the press, so I wouldn't sue him for libel. Number one, he accused me of being this day and age of being a Chinese government agent. He and Chris Daley went to file a political report with, I don't know, with the FBI or the CIA, I don't know which, and red baiting in 21st century.
McCarthy era, yeah.
Yeah, 21st yeah. century, and they call themselves liberal in this town. That's a crock, you know. But secondly,
you were taking a number of trips over to the People's Republic and taking people
every year. Yeah. I take my vacation there because I have friends there. I don't need to pay hotels. I can stay with friends.
All right, raise your right hand. Were you ever or have you ever been a member?
No.
I'm sorry. I'm just having fun here.
So you can imagine.
I'm making light of it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't respond to those things. Then that's where I grew up. Why shouldn't I go back there, you know?
Then you grew up in northern China, yes?
I was born in northern China, but I was 2 years old when I arrived in Hong Kong. And then I spent my time over there. So I grew up there until I came here for college. So those are my roots. And I do go there at least once a year. And then the occasional time that I went there twice a year was when I took, you know, the chamber group, sometimes with politicians, sometimes without the politicians, to, you know, whatever mission that they were going on. Yes, a couple of days I joined them.
So can we go back to the significance of Washington Street 8?
Okay, then in one of those trips in the early years, some 20-some-odd years ago, I met my friend Simon Snellgrove, who happens to be the developer.
The contractor, yeah?
No, he's the
developer
for 8 Washington. He's a good friend. He has a good project. He worked on it for 10 years to get it through. I never spoke once to any of those supervisors about it. I, you know, never do things for my personal friends or personal or my family or any of those type of things.
Let me invite people to join us. People may have questions for you. They may want to indeed weigh in here, join our conversation, an opportunity to speak to Rose Back, who by most lights is perhaps the most powerful woman in San Francisco, but in many lights, including her own, she's just trying to do what she can for or on behalf of the Chinese community. We're featuring her on our program this morning, and we'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to do that. There are a number of ways to do it. You can tweet us, and maybe we can talk about Twitter not being taxed, but we can get into some issues here as well. But our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. You can also join us by phone. Our toll-free number is available to you, and you can call right now. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls. Again, toll-free from wherever or however you're listening to us, 866-733-6786. Or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can also go to our Facebook page. Talking with Rose Pack, and we'll talk with you and hear from you about your thoughts, and please join the conversation. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Our guest this hour is Rose Pack, who, as I said, by most lights is certainly one of the most powerful figures in San Francisco politics, although not, as she has said publicly, a paid lobbyist. Just said to me off air, she's only been in the mayor's office a couple times, doesn't necessarily go to the Board of Supervisors, really, but has had quite a leadership role in terms of galvanizing her community and getting campaign money and all of that sort of thing. And I mean, some of the things are, you probably, I suspect, Rose, take umbrage at some of the things that have been said about Mayor Lee because you've known him for so long and been close friends with him. You know, that they used to talk about Tony Blair as Bush's poodle, talk about Mayor Lee being on Rose Pack's leash, that sort of thing. I mean, does it rankle you? Does it get you upset to hear that?
Well, yes and no. I used to spend a lot of more time at Dianne Feinstein's house and with Dianne Feinstein, and nobody ever said that about me. And certainly in the short duration of George Moscone, you know, I spent more time talking to George when he was mayor, you know. Art Agnos.
Well, you were a confidant to Agnos, actually, for a number of years.
A lot.
Excuse me, there's an email here from Tony. Maybe he lives in Silicon Valley, but he says, correct him if he's, or agree with him, if you will, whatever. He says, I believe what Ms. Pack is trying to say is that her community is the city of San Francisco.
That's what I've been trying to say. You know, we're part of San Francisco, and I care deeply about San Francisco, and we care deeply about our community in particular. For example, I'd like you to talk about the hospital, because I have been pushing. You talk about lobbying supervisors to push for St. Luke's as well as CPMC. And then once that is going, I hope I can help the Veterans Hospital stay in San Francisco, move down to Mission Bay near where UCSF is, because 70% of the research are connected at the Veteran Hospital is connected to UCSF. So I want to make San Francisco, you know, the premier medical destination for all kinds of illness and sickness and to get well, you know, on our coast.
You have a similar vision to Mrs. Wilsey. To Dianne Wilsey, then,
because yeah, well, you know, so to you know, the same thing pushing the Central Subway. It's not just going into Chinatown. You know, I started listening to the Central Subway at the glimpse. You know, when they were planning Mission Bay, the first time I heard about the light rail, Third Street Light Rail, it was, I swear, in 1967-68, I was a student. I just, you know, go around listening, go pop into meetings, etc. And then I said, I wonder what happened to North Beach Chinatown quadrant when you have all this transportation planned in the future around the waterfront, the Embarcadero, all of that stuff. And then I said, how do you connect all those communities with each other so that we will not suffer urban decay? Because you find you could travel as a first, you know, foreigner to America. You travel on the freeway. You go from town to town. One thing that struck me, you know, in the 70s and 80s was how all the beautiful, small, historical downtowns turn empty. And I discovered it was freeway. The freeway bypassed that part of town, and they built all the brand-new suburban area, and urban decay sets into downtown, the older areas. So I go, I don't want that to happen to Chinatown and North Beach. Those are the soul of a city.
Actually, I've got a caller on who is, well, has something to say right on this point. Go ahead, Bob. You're on.
Well, she just laid out everything I was going to say. You know, the last Jewish markets just closed in the avenues last month. What she's done is not just for Chinatown, it's the entire North Beach financial system. I remember when you used to be able to drive, one before the earthquake, right into the financial system, right into Chinatown, and that made it very accessible. My dad had a wife, she's Japanese, she used to go in every Sunday to buy the dinner and then bring it out. That's not accessible like it is before. And everything she just said, it's not healthy to have a freeway just running right through the city. And then that's it. And what she's doing is bringing people in, not just to Chinatown. And obviously her vision is just what the reality of what she's doing is beyond Chinatown. It would bring you right in. The old structure that came down brought you right into the financial district, brought you right into Barcadero, right into Fisherman's Wharf. It's not accessible like that anymore. And what she's doing with the subway is, I wish she'd bring the freeway right back in, but it looks like that, if that's not possible, at least she's doing something. And as far as bringing in, having an ethnic community bring in, hopefully that ethnic community keeps on growing. And if you don't have that, you have what's called sick building syndrome, where things decay and where you'll have high rises, all right, you'll have nothing but high rises.
All right, Bob, I thank you for the call. I want to get on to some more calls because we want to hear from as many listeners as we can. Let me actually get Ben on next. Ben, you're on.
Hi. I read that San Francisco Magazine article a couple months ago, a profile on you, Rose. There was part of that that talked about how you blocked a person from getting a job at City Hall and wanted to understand sort of the role that, you know, community representative plays in such decisions.
Oh, that was very simple. It isn't very often that you get to do that. You have to understand for the 40-some-odd years at the Chinatown North Beach area, the one constant thing that is always against whether our project to build a garage or to rebuild the iHotel, to build the City College, build anything, has been Supervisor Aaron Paskin. So the mayor's Office of Economic Development, you know, was hiring new staff. And so one of the new staff that they were considering hiring was the chief of staff for 8 years for Supervisor Aaron Paskin, and who consistently still works for him on different campaign. So these are the people that have been blocking the progress of my community. And I said, how can that person be representing our interests on community development and work with us? Yes.
Very simple, as you said. And actually, I've got somebody else on our website who brings up, again, the question of political influence. Is it true that Ms. Pack helped Eric Marr get reelected supervisor after he gave her the vote she wanted for the controversial Washington Building Project?
No. I've known Eric Marr for many years. And I think I don't agree with Supervisor Eric Marr on most issues. However, I think he is a very decent man, and he's very kind man, but on the community issues, especially on education and those areas, he has been very good. So I don't understand, you know, why some other political operatives can run, and why can't I support him?
Let me read a couple of tweets. This first one says, not a lobbyist? Oh, please. Chamber of Commerce is, at its core, a lobbying group. And another listener says, tweets, how does Ms. Pack feel about the attempt to repeal California's shark fin soup ban? Gets us right back to Leland Yee, but you want to take those one at a time?
Yes. What was the first one?
First one was not a lobbyist. Oh, please, Chamber of Commerce is
okay. Our Chinese Chamber of Commerce is 100% small businesses around Chinatown. They none even qualify as medium business in the state designation, let alone federal designation. They're all family-style oriented businesses, most of whom are monolingual. So they might call the Chinese Chamber of Commerce, but their issues are not your corporate 500 type issues or the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce issues.
But there's still issues that need legislative persuasion and
influence. Well, it's more small businesses like garbage rate increases, water rate increases, not cleaning streets, not picking up garbage, not, removing graffiti fast enough. Very small, mundane, but critical issues.
And a listener wanted to know where you stand on shark fin soup on the ban.
I have very mixed feelings about it because I grew up enjoying shark fin soup. Since it has been passed by the state legislators, I, obey the law like everybody else.
Paula, let's get you on next. Hi, Paula.
Hello. I've been waiting all week long just to hear this program. So I just called to thank you and also thank Rose Pack. I met her in 1979 for being a role model for all of us minority women, especially for me as a Latina community activist. I just wanted to make sure that she knew that not only has she influenced her own community, but she has also influenced all of our minority communities who take umbrage also for being called a lobbyist when we're just community advocates. So thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Good to hear from you. Actually, a listener writes on our website, it seems like Chinese San Francisco is being lumped into one pro-PAC entity. Like Jewish Americans, Arab Americans, and African Americans, Chinese Americans are not one monolithic group. And I don't think
I agree with you. Couldn't agree with you more.
Likewise. And Ryan tweets, Rose Pack's assertion that electing Lee was a community effort is belied by Conway's Republican money, Brown's outsized influence. I think recently it was Phil Matier who said, you've got one polarity of Ron Conway and you've got one polarity of Rose Pack. As if those are the two political poles. Yeah.
No, I met Mr. Ron Conway maybe three times in my life. They were all at social functions. I don't know where the animosity, rivalry, or whatever you call it came from. I honestly don't know.
Well, when we have Ron Conway on, we may ask him if he knows. But in the meantime, we'll get another caller on. Nick, that's you. Good morning.
Hello. Yes, good morning, Michael. I've been listening to you for more than 20 years, ever since you were in KGO. And at the same time, I'd like to mention that I'm very proud of the Chinese community. They came a long way, and they're very successful. At the same time, I heard Rosie was complaining that how Chinese communities they were being discriminated against 100 years ago. But when they came to power, they used the same unhumane tactics to punish other newcomers and not share the political situation in San Francisco and punishing like Sheriff Rasmir Karimi.
Not sure I understand what you're bringing up here, Nick.
Pardon?
Yeah. What is the nature of what you're bringing up here?
I'm trying to say that when Rosie is
you think that Rose Pack is trying to exclude newcomers the same way Chinese were excluded? Is that what I'm hearing?
Exactly. They did it. They used all their evil forces to try to Rasmir Karimi not to get elected in the first place. And when he got elected, they put their all evil forces, particularly Puppet Eddie and Vinnie Clown and Pumpkin Rosie to not let him get elected or keep his office when he was elected by the people of San Francisco. And I'm very happy there were some other forces that justfully they let him retain his...
All right, so you're talking specifically about Sheriff Mercurimi, yes?
Pardon?
You're talking more specifically about Sheriff Mercurimi.
Exactly, yes.
All right, let me get Rose Pack to respond to your call.
Well, first of all, I never took any position on Ross McCreamy because I don't have a vote on Ross McCreamy. So I don't know what...
Mayor Lee, of course, wanted to keep him from assuming his position. Maybe that's what the caller means.
Yeah, but then wasn't he shy of the necessary votes so he kept his job?
He did keep his job, yeah.
Yeah, so what has that got to do with me?
Not sure. Thank you for the call. Here's Sue who says, perhaps Rose Pack cannot deliver the Central Subway herself, but she must have some thoughts on the cost of the project and its impact on future Muni operating funds. This is one of the major concerns of people who oppose the Central Subway project. Can Ms. Pack speak on this?
Yes, I understand Muni's problem is a monumental problem because we not only have residents, we have to provide public transit for all the workers that come in during the daytime, plus all the visitors. I sympathize with that, but the most expedient way to connect all of those communities that I've been talking about is not by adding more cars and more buses on the surface roads, but building those underground massive transit lines that will alleviate the problems of Muni. So once the Central Subway is built, I'm sure the route that has been taken by Central Subway will feel lightened, and the ridership will increase on the subway because it's more efficient and it doesn't interfere over the surface roads.
Well, here's a tweet from a listener named Mike who says, I'd love to ask Rose Pack why a transit-only Stockton wasn't an option if 70% of Chinatown doesn't own a car.
What?
Why a transit-only Stockton wasn't an option if 70% of Chinatown doesn't own a car, and rather than the Central Subway, Stockton Street.
Well, I just said because the demand is so huge that, you know, if you rode on the 30 Stockton bus, sometimes, you know, four or five buses go by you fully packed. It's precisely because our people don't own the car that we need additional public transit.
And here's Jerry who tweets, please ask Rose Pack about the Central Subway stop that was supposed to be built under a building owned by Pius Lee.
Pius Lee does not own that building. Never had. He is a realtor. He probably wish he could represent the owner.
I'm also looking at a Wall Street Journal editorial that somebody sent on the Central Subway. It was titled Off the San Francisco Rails, $1.6 billion for 1.7 miles of subway. Let me just read it to you and get your response. It says, Tony Bennett may have left his heart in San Francisco, but the politicians who contrived the city's Chinatown subway project must have left their brains somewhere else. The subway is a case study in government incompetence and wasted taxpayer money. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Former Mayor Willie Brown sold a half-cent sales tax hike to voters in 2003 to pay for the 1.7-mile line on the pretext that the subway would ease congestion on Chinatown's crowded buses. But he was more interested in obtaining the political support of Chinatown's power brokers. There's that word again. In 2003, the city estimates the line would cost $647 million, but the latest prediction is $1.6 billion, or nearly $100 million for each tenth of a mile.
Well, I don't agree with the Wall Street Journal most of the time these days.
But not on that, obviously. You are not in agreement. All right, let me bring another caller in. And Tom, that's you. You're on forum. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Michael, and thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to say first that my Chinese-American sister-in-law is an unabashed power broker. She's now the supervisor in the state tax office, but she volunteers at the local Chinese communities and helps the people with their tax problems, fill out their forms and all that, and also provides Chinese-American interns to the Capitol. So, I mean, she's just a powerhouse, and she's just in her early 50s right now. But also, the idea of having Stanford-trained physicians, you know, like Dr. Chin and Dr. Lee, their lucrative practices, at least for a time, to serve the people, is just the model we need for a national health plan. Instead of, you know, providing full payments to all the insurance companies, which you know, the Affordable Health Care Act does now, but doesn't really provide the means to the people who can't afford the insurance to, you know, buy their health plan. But this program of having people, ethnic or even just sympathizers who, you know, care about poor people and their medical problems, go from Stanford directly into the inner city and say, what can I do to help you? That's the real program, whether it has any communistic roots or not. I mean, we're the only, you know, developing country. It's because we're so far from communism that we can't even provide or even think about providing health care. So actually, we need to get towards, you know, listen to people who have had experience in communistic and socialistic countries. That's the real and the only solution that's going to, you know, save lives ultimately.
All right, Tom, thank you for that editorial comment. And I want to read some more comments, editorial and otherwise, from listeners. Julie writes, I recognize the values that ROSPAC represents. I have been involved in caring about my community and committees and as an elected official over the nearly 65 years of my life. I don't want to sound chauvinistic, but it has become clear to me that women in general bring qualities to the political realm and interaction that are different than what men bring. Key among these is perseverance. For whatever reason, women understand the power of perseverance over time, and patience, calmness under duress are qualities that women bring to the table in greater measure than men, and it's what the world needs more of if we are to succeed as occupants in our local and global communities. Thank you, ROSPAC. You are an inspiration to me.
Thank you.
And Beth writes on our website, if it's okay for the Italians, gay, lesbian community leaders to flex their muscle in San Francisco politics, and why isn't it permitted for Ms. Pack to do as well? After all, the local Chinese community has been around since the 1800s, and nobody said that it wasn't right for Ms. Pack to do what she does. Rick writes on in terms of the interests of the Chinese community as well as the broader and greater community. Rick writes on our Facebook page, too bad Rose couldn't have been elected mayor of Oakland rather than Gene Kwan. Her sense of pragmatism would have done a lot more for us than Kwan's 1960s brand of politics, which he apparently never grew out of. That's a slam, obviously, on Gene Kwan. We'll just let it stand because we read pretty much whatever you send in here, as long as it's not profane and all that, or libelous. How's the community changed over the years? I'm talking specifically about the Chinese-American community, though. And are there issues in terms of living in Chinatown now that are very different than those who live elsewhere?
Yes, our housing stock, you know, has deteriorated because, you know, we haven't had any new public housing for, you know, 50 years at least. And most of our housing stock, SROs, you know, which means that they share bathrooms and shared kitchen. It's difficult sometimes when, you know, in America, when we're so affluent as a country, to deal with some of the issues facing each and every community with the poor and elderly. I'll give you an example that I did go to Mayor Lee when he took over 2 years ago. I missed seeing an elderly gentleman, you know, down at the coffee shop for several months. So one Saturday, I went up to see the guy. He was, you know, 85 years old. Turned out he was bedridden and couldn't move. So when I went up to his room to say hello, I saw a couple of plastic basins, you know, those little plastic things that hospital give you to a gargle to wash up or something. And they have some boxes, cardboard type boxes of stuff in there. So, and I said, oh, Mr. Liu, you know, what are those? You know, how do you feed yourself? So he said that he get his meals delivered now because he couldn't move. And I said, what are those? He says, well, those are my dinner for today, which was Saturday, and tomorrow. I was horrified when I opened the carton and they were thawed out of something frozen before, been sitting there since Friday for 24 hours. They were thawing, but I don't know what they were. I asked him, how come? He says that they said they had the budget cut, so they didn't have the money to deliver the hot meals on Saturday and Sunday. So that was his meal for Saturday and Sunday. The guy lives in a SRO, which is the bulk of the housing in Chinatown. And he couldn't move out of his bed. He doesn't have a microwave in his room, nor do they have a microwave in the communal kitchen. Maybe if they had it, he wouldn't know how to use it either because he was, you know, lay up in bed. I was very distraught, so I did go to the mayor's office.
I can still hear the emotion in your voice just talking
and,
about it.
And yeah. The budget. For crying out loud, you know, how do you take care of those people? Then I went to the different meal site in Chinatown. Lunch, we have meal site. I discover two-thirds of the seniors have a plastic bag and some plastic utensils. They pay a couple of dollars for their meal, and they only eat half of that. The rest, they boxed it or used plastic bag and wrapped it to take it home for their dinner. So when you talk about people with fixed income, $700 a month, they have to pay $450 for that single room. They are left with $250 for food, for electricity, for telephone, for clothing, for everything.
Rose Peck, let's end there. Thank you so much for being with us. Rose Peck, again, is officially general consultant with the San Francisco Chinese Chamber of Commerce. We're here with you Monday through Friday. We're produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai with online support from David Marks. Senior editor Dan Zoll. Executive producer Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
This program was produced as a part of Makers, an initiative of PBS and AOL. Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.